Welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by College Football Talk Daily. Today is Monday, December 31st, also known as New Year's Eve for all of our listeners out there. We got a full slate of things to talk about. We're going to get to the games that happened on Saturday, the semifinals, and we're also going to talk a little bit about Michigan. But before we jump into all of that, we have just gotten news that Manny Diaz is taking the job at Miami. Just 17 days after he accepted the job at Temple. John, what are you thinking?
Well, I mean, he was undefeated at Temple, so.
Maybe they'll give him a banner.
Yeah, maybe they'll claim a national championship, like UCF.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Bear Bryant.
I think that it's very good for Miami because, you know, he was the defensive coordinator there. And a lot of kids decommitted when he left. I think it was like 11 kids or something like that.
Yeah.
So maybe you get like 8, maybe you get all 11 back with him being the head coach.
So this obviously falls into a weird scenario where you have coaches leaving the school. And, you know, you talk about the transfer rule with the kids. When they leave, they have to sit out of here. And a player that we just saw from Temple, Zach Mesday, I believe he's a 6-year senior coming up. He's a Jersey guy. He tweeted out, let me see, where is it? He just tweeted out, does he have to sit out a year? Obviously, referencing, like, if he was transferred, he'd have to sit out a year. And this puts us in a weird scenario where I think that it's unfair for the kids where, you know, you're not supposed to commit to a coach. You're supposed to commit to a school, all that. But, you know, if we just look at the facts, I think a lot of these kids are committing towards coaches who make them feel most at home, regardless of the school. And I think that there needs to be some kind of opportunity for these kids to make a decision if they want to stay or if they want to go. You know, maybe give them 14 days. You know, you have 14 days to decide if you want to stay at said school or if you want to go and explore your options elsewhere. You know, I know this isn't that big of a deal because Diaz is only there for, like I said, 17 days. But you know, in a different situation, if a coach has been there for 2 or 3 years or even, you know, longer, and a kid wants to go play for that coach and he leaves, that, you know, that's kind of leaving the kid in the dust.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, talking with Zach, I mean, he made light of the situation. He didn't seem too, you know, like losing sleep over or anything like that. But I think that players, it would hurt more if it wasn't 17 days. You know, like when coaches just leave, like maybe if he coached a few games and left. But still, players need a way out. Like 14 days, that's probably enough, I think.
Yeah. But I think it's fair for the kids to have that opportunity to say that, you know, I want to go explore my options elsewhere. Just give them the option. You know, I feel like a lot of these kids feel like they're pinned there now. I mean, not Temple's situation, but a lot of other places, you know, maybe they feel they're pinned and they can't leave because they, you know, don't want to sit out of here. So I think some kind of option for them would be good.
No, so I agree.
Let's get back on to what our original plan was, jumping into the semifinals. And I got to say, these games were not what I expected and not what I hoped for. So
they were chalk. They were what I expected.
Let's start with the early game, which is the absolute blowout of Notre Dame by Clemson. How much of that did you catch?
I mean, gonna be honest, I fell asleep in like the third quarter, maybe for like 10 minutes. I mean, Notre Dame, they're not on the same level as these other teams. They're on a Georgia level, an Ohio State level. Like, I don't think they should have been there in the first place. And I think that Clemson game proved it right. I think that they should join a conference. You know, if they're in the ACC, they would have last week and got exposed last week. And Georgia or Ohio State would have been in. And, I mean, if you saw on Twitter, all the Georgia players were pretty pissed about it. But,
yeah,
I mean, my answer to that is don't lose two games.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what we talked about that last week. But, like, I think I watched pretty much the whole entire game, and then I watched the first quarter, and I was surprised the way Notre Dame came out. They got to Lawrence. They pressured him. They put him in uncomfortable situations. They kind of looked uncharacteristic, though, on offense with the two fumbles that they only had four all year, and they had two in the first quarter, which I thought maybe was, you know, just that moment getting to them a little bit. But the moment for me that I really knew the game was over was at the end of the first half when Lawrence – through that touchdown, it was kind of like a circus play. You know, corner played good coverage, tapped the ball up, and receiver came down with it. You know, it was it was such like a crazy play that I said this is a Clemson game, but I did not think it was going to be a 30-3 massacre.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with Notre Dame is like they play an ACC schedule, but they avoid Clemson every year.
Mm-hmm.
They don't play Clemson because of this reason. Like this is exactly why they don't play Clemson during the regular season, because they would never make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, like everyone gave them, I mean, rightfully so, everyone gave them a problem for playing a weak schedule. I mean, if you look at their schedule just based off this year, it was an easy schedule. And you got to remember with Michigan week one, that wasn't the Michigan team we saw in week nine. Later in the year, that was
You want to see the last.
That was not a complete project of Michigan, but if you look at just like school history, like you have USC is down, Florida State's down, but that's not. I mean, it's not Notre Dame's fault, but also you played Ball State and you played them at home and you barely won that game. So, drop Ball State and you could have played a better team from the ACC or the SEC and you could have helped your credibility. And I mean, you already play an ACC schedule; just join a conference already.
Yeah, I agree.
That does nothing at this point but hurt them going on next year. Say next year they run the table again and they're 12-0. I don't see the committee putting them in.
I think it depends on the situation, but yeah, I'd probably leave them out too. If it was the same situation as this year, I'd leave them out.
I mean, I would have, like, even before the game, I would have put Ohio State in, and now I'm positive I would have.
Yes, me too. I said Ohio State should have been in.
Yeah, we both felt adamant that Notre Dame shouldn't have been in because they weren't in a conference, but it was just a situation. But there's no reason that Ohio State should have been left out. Now that watching that game, Ohio State or Georgia would have put up a better game against Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump into the nightcap, which was obviously Alabama and Oklahoma. And I'll tell you, the score says that game was close, but we watched it, and at no point during that game did I think that Oklahoma had a fighter's chance.
Well, I just feel like, yes, I agree. I mean, no point that I feel like, oh man, Alabama's on the ropes or anything like that. I mean, you can't give Bama a 21-point lead. They had 20 points. Like, that many points, you're not going to come back against Nick Saban.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, everyone's been saying all year, this is probably the best team Saban's had. And you can't, like you said, you can't give them 21 points. I mean, you can't give them 14 points, in my opinion. They'll beat you with 14. You spot this Alabama team 14, you have no chance of coming back. You know, score's 45-34, looks close on paper, but if you watch the game, you know that Oklahoma at no point during this game was a real threat to Alabama.
No, I agree. I mean, there was Kyler Murray, he played better in the second half, but I mean, Alabama, like, the one play he rushed for like 40 yards, maybe 50, I think, but they were playing prevent defense, like,
mm-hmm.
They let him run. It was like there's 6 seconds left in the half, I think.
Yeah. I want to say I'm surprised by the Oklahoma offense being so flat, but I'm not sure if they were just that flat or if this Alabama defense is just that good and just never got credited all year.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma also struggled because, Marquise Brown, he didn't have a catch in the Orange Bowl against Alabama. When that's not like him. He's very good, but his foot clearly was not 100%.
Yeah, Alabama's defense, that line is probably the second best line behind Clemson. Even without Lawrence, I still think that Clemson is the best defensive line in the country. But they beat them up. I thought Oklahoma had a fighter's chance going into the game because Kyler Murray, when his mobility with obviously his arm and his legs, and I felt like those are the quarterbacks that really give Alabama trouble. If you look in the past with Nick Saban teams, they struggle with quarterbacks who can run and really spread out the field. So I thought that was going to be a more interesting game than it was. And, like I said, even though the score looks close, anyone watching that game knows that it was not a very close game.
No, it wasn't. And I think you're right about the dual threat quarterbacks beating Alabama, like, Deshaun Watson and a lot of people say that this is like Cavs and Warriors having these two teams go up against each other again, Alabama, Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think so because of the roster turnover. I mean, Clemson's on their third quarterback in 3 years. So
yeah. And actually, before we jump into all the Alabama and Clemson talk, which we are obviously going to, if anyone out there wants to, hear what the Alabama fans are talking, give a listen over to our friends with the Double Coverage podcast. They are an Alabama-based podcast. They know what they're talking about. They're going to give you some great insight. We're big listeners, so. But back to what you just said about the quarterbacks. That is that's a great point. I mean, it's another quarterback that's going to have to go against a Saban defense, and you know they're 1-for-2 right now, and I don't think they have a chance against Alabama. I think it will be a close game, but I don't think they have a real chance of shocking. I don't think they'll beat them. I think it'll be a close game. So, you know, 1-for-3. You know, I saw a thing the other day. Saban's only lost to, I think, 3 true freshman quarterbacks.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so. Now, Trevor Lawrence, it's not like he has anything behind him, but performance in the first game on both quarterbacks. I mean, you look, Trevor Lawrence threw for 327 with 3 touchdowns. Tua was like 24 of 27, I think. He was 24 of 27, 4 touchdowns, 318. I mean, it's going to be a real fun game. I'm not sure if it's going to be a shootout or it's going to be a defensive game. I really don't even know what to predict for score.
No. I'd probably say give Alabama a 10 or 12, maybe a 14 point. I mean, I don't necessarily think Clemson's going to challenge them because I don't think Clemson can score and keep up with them. I mean, Oklahoma couldn't score and keep up with them, so.
Yeah, the only thing that I think Clemson has is the defense. I mean, like I said, Alabama's defense is, I feel like it's underrated, but Clemson's offense, a defense, I mean, is very, very, very good. Like, this is a defense where I think they can, you know, have stops when they need it. The defensive line was shuffling in 8 guys all game fresh, and they were all just monsters up front. So with the loss of Dexter Lawrence, they're still a premier defensive line. So I think defensively they match up well. I think they match up well offensively, but the Saban factor is just something that does it for
me. Yeah, he's probably the greatest coach in history. I mean, he's that good.
I'd probably say he is the greatest coach in football history.
No, college history.
I'm not a big NFL guy, as some of you guys may know. We're going to jump into our questions from our followers. Every week we tweet out some questions. We like our podcast to be follower-driven. So if you have any questions relating to college football, feel free to send it our way. Maybe we'll feature you on the podcast, give you a quick shout-out before we answer it. Like, our first question here from one of our followers, Monty Bangs, and his question, he wants to know if we can see college football implement some kind of tournament, like how basketball does the Big 12 versus the ACC tournament, something like that, you know, where it's all the teams play against each other. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting concept. I like it. I'm not sure how it would work.
Well, I think you can make it work by maybe getting rid of an out-of-conference game, mm-hmm. or, you know, like division, like how the Big 10 West, like Rutgers, Iowa, get rid of that game and have Rutgers maybe play like a Pac-12 team or, you know, like an American team if it's an American crossover.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then you'd have to figure out what conferences are going to do it, because I don't think many people want to watch an SEC Sun Belt crossover. I think they'd rather see obviously an SEC and a SEC Big 12 and one of the other powers.
Is Troy in the Sun Belt?
I think Troy is in the Sun Belt.
They beat LSU.
Yeah, but if you look at the schedule, what game's going to be look more appealing to you? Troy, LSU, just not knowing in the final, Troy, LSU, or Alabama, Ohio State, regular season?
Week. No, yeah, definitely Alabama, Ohio State.
Yeah, so I like the idea. Obviously, the crossovers are a big thing. So maybe you do this every other year. I don't know if you keep the conferences, but I do like that idea, Monty. It's a smart idea. I would like to see that. That's something that you should definitely just throw in. I think it helps at a conference. I hope to see that coming in soon.
Yeah. Quick question. Did you see the Michigan-Florida game?
Oh, yeah. We forgot to talk about that one. Yeah, that game. I woke up early to watch it. I mean, early.
All right.
O'clock. Yeah, I remember. I like sleeping in, but I was disappointed that I woke up to watch that game.
I'm going to be honest, I had no interest in that game because no one wanted to see Michigan Florida anyway. I think most people wanted to see Florida UCF and maybe Michigan play LSU or something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what it should have been, but I did watch the second half mostly, and I don't know what happened to Michigan's defense, but you know, they stink now.
And it's funny.
Just one point to make quick. The bowl game, they were missing a lot of starters.
Yeah, and it, like I was gonna say, it's funny that you said you watched the second half because I was up. I watched the first half, and at half it was I believe it was a 13-10 game Florida. So, you know, Michigan was obviously in it. They're down three, but I think Michigan has this weird trend with them, which we'll hit on in a second, where they have this stretch of let's say 7 minutes where they just don't play defense. And
yeah,
they got goose egged in the third and they gave up 14. So in many situations, you're not coming back from that, especially when you don't score in the fourth quarter very many points. You only score five.
Yeah, I think that – see, I don't know. I mean, one other point about that game, and then we'll move on, is I think Felipe Franks is not as bad as Florida fans make him out to be. I mean, I see all year Florida fans on the timeline complaining about, you know, Amorie Jones should start or Emory Jones. I don't know how to say his name, but I think Felipe Franks has earned to be the right to be a starter.
Yeah, well, maybe they just judge it off of his facial hair, and that's why he shouldn't start.
Or that he got into a bar fight. I don't know if you saw that video.
Yeah, that could be it, too. Going from one Michigan game to the next leads us into a follower question. It's kind of perfect. Spencer wants to know if the Michigan defense was bad on the day they played Ohio State, or the Ohio State offense was just very explosive all year.
All right. Oh, I am passionate about this one. I think that Michigan has just, you know, they went into the film room the week before the game and they just watched no film all week. I think that's what they did, because Michigan, I mean, Ohio State just ran crossing routes every play, and somehow Michigan had 11 players on the field. And all 11 guys were covering no one because there was someone open on every single play.
Mm-hmm.
Like Paris Campbell, he had like 100 and something yards. The jet sweep he took for like 78 yards. I mean, Haskins broke a TD record in the Big Ten. Chris Olave, a freshman, had two receiving touchdowns where the one he just, the corner, I don't know what he was doing.
It's funny you say that about the cross routes, because I was in the car when that game just started. I missed like first probably 10 minutes of it. And I remember seeing on Twitter, someone said something along the lines of, has Michigan never seen a cross route before? And I was like, oh man, this is not the start that Michigan drew, like, ideally wanted, especially at Ohio State. I was surprised that Ohio State was underdogs to begin with at home, even though it was only, I think, 2.5 points, nothing big. But I think what Spencer's, both of his questions, they were both right. Michigan's defense just had a bad day. Like I said, like Michigan, they were in that game in the first half. And I think it's a third quarter trend where they just don't play in the third quarter. Because third quarter, they got outscored 17-0. And especially when you have Dwayne Haskins throwing for almost 400 yards and breaking the Big Ten touchdown record, I guess, in a single game, 6 touchdowns. And you can't allow that to happen.
That might be, hold on, I think that might be an Ohio State Michigan record, but I'm not sure, or an Ohio State record. It might be an Ohio State record.
Either way, 6 touchdowns, you can't just let them throw 6 touchdowns, especially when you were a top 5 defense in the country and you left 62 points. I get it, it's Ohio State. I think they were like a top 3 offense in the country. They were the number 2 offense in the country, only behind Oklahoma. So offense versus defense, most times I feel defense wins, but not in the third quarter when you're not showing up at all and not covering any cross routes. And so I think it was just one of those days where Michigan just didn't have it on defense and Ohio State really showed up to play.
Yeah. I think that just – is Harbaugh overrated? That's the question.
I said this after week one, and I know a lot of followers who see our tweets from Michigan – and our Michigan fans agreed with me. He's never won the big one. And by the big one, I mean he's never beat Ohio State.
I mean, and not even Ohio State. He hasn't really won a big game yet.
Yeah, I mean, he recruits so well. He brings in, you know, every year he's bringing in a good class. And he can't beat Ohio State regardless. And if I'm a Michigan fan, the only game I care about is Ohio State, honestly. Like, that rivalry is so hated. Like, they hate each other so much that I don't know how you can watch it. I think he's, what, 0-5 against
Yeah, he might be 0-5.
I don't know if I'd say he's overrated, but I think I would, actually. Yeah, I would say he's overrated.
I'm into that. That's it. She's overrated.
Yeah, I changed my mind within like 2 seconds. But something I have to watch with coming into the offseason is the NFL, because Jets just fired Bolts today earlier, and it was already reported the Jets were going to go hard after him. Do you think there's any chance Michigan could go into the NFL? Maybe not Jets, but one of the open positions.
No. No.
Yeah, I think he likes college. I think he's a big college football guy. I think he likes where he is. I think he likes doing college. So I don't think he'll leave Michigan for the NFL. But there's definitely rumors coming around about it.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So it's something to look into. Very, I don't know. I don't
see. I just think that Shea Patterson wouldn't have came back if he had any think that Harbaugh was going to go.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So let's jump into our last question, who is from Ricky Morales. He's a, you know, he's one of those guys always tweeting back at us for some good stuff. And he wants to know, it's a two-part question, actually. Is Oregon a contender next year? We'll talk about that one first because we already hit on it.
We talked about that last week, and I think that, I mean, with Herbert coming back, he's basically, you know, he should be in the NFL this year. So he's probably the best quarterback in college football next year.
Over Tua?
Yeah.
Let's not get off topic here, though. I was going
to go. No. Let's talk about it. If he entered his name in the NFL draft, he's probably, I mean, the Cardinals have the first overall pick, but he's the first quarterback off the board.
Oh, yeah.
So he's in the NFL. He's NFL ready. You know, NFL teams are willing to pick him right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's probably the best quarterback in college football.
Me, personally, I would have went, but, you know, I've never had the opportunity to play college football with my brother, so I don't know. I mean, yeah. I get staying back. I get it. But I don't think it was the good choice for him. But that being said, him coming back, like we said last week, you know, because he was still up in the air, him coming back definitely does make them not only a front runner for the Pac-12, but also for the national championship. Especially mm-hmm. The Pac-12 isn't that strong of a conference, really. And next year they play a friendly-ish schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have Washington's losing guys, but you got Eason coming off of a transfer. So, but you never know you're going to get Eason, if he's going to be the same guy he was at Georgia. So I think they're in a really good situation where they could get in if they win the games they're supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Cristobal, I know he was talked about for the Miami job before Diaz took it. Him staying is good for them. This would have been 2 years in a row losing a guy who brings in a really good recruiting class. That would have hurt them majorly.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think the biggest part of the recruiting class this year isn't a kid coming in. I think it's him coming back is the biggest recruit they had come in. Is Herbert coming back?
I don't know about that. But yeah, probably, actually. Yeah, never mind.
So the second part of Rick's question, does Auburn new offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham make a difference with Bo Nix?
All right, well, I think that he runs at Memphis. They ran a very ground and pound kind of, you know, Darrell Henderson, 2,200 all-purpose yards. They ran him into the ground. I think if you do that at Auburn, it'll give Bo Nix a great chance early on in his career to make an impact. You know, the run game takes some pressure off the freshman. I think that's probably the best. That's a very good hire.
I mean, like what you kind of just said, where, you know, if they run a ground-and-pound offense, can they run a ground-and-pound offense in the SEC, playing the schedule they play?
Yeah, I mean, most teams do it in the SEC.
Yeah, but
I mean, Kentucky did it this year.
Yeah, but Kentucky was also – I loved Kentucky, like, 4 years ago. I don't know why I saw them playing. I was like, wow, this team's going to be good in, like, 2 years, and then I guess I was 2 years off. And I also didn't know that Allen was going to be a, you know, NFL talent the way he is. But with Auburn, Gus Malzahn, he's really under the microscope right now for his record in the last, I guess, like 3 or 4 years. He hasn't won more than 8 games except for, I think, last year they won 9 when they beat Alabama. So I'm curious on if he's going to step in and say anything along the lines of running the offense, because offensively, Memphis was the fourth best offense in the country. You know, they were ahead of West Virginia. They were ahead of, you know, Texas Tech. You know, Big 12 teams have had great offenses. So I'm interested in seeing what kind of scheme he's going to bring in, if Gus is going to let him run the show, or if he's going to step in and say, you know, this is how the SEC likes to do it. We're going to do it this way.
Yeah, just to, like, to add one thing on that, Gus Malzahn should have been fired. But we're not going there, so.
We'll go there real quick. He should have.
Oh, okay. Well.
We hit it. We were there. So that everything that we wanted to talk about today that we felt was necessary to bring up. Like I said, keep your eyes open during the week. We're going to tweet out for you guys to send in our questions for us. You know, maybe we'll answer them. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.